Are you ready for the Low Blows Network? Every Wednesday on the Low Blows Network, the Low Blows team are at hand to break down, analyze, and make fun of all things pro wrestling. Hosted by former pro wrestler Rick Nash. I think the only reasonable thing we can do now is turn John Cena heel.
Selfie with me fucking dog.
Banned from Nigeria. I will be talking to the government tomorrow morning.
YouTube star Corporate King.
This elephant has four legs. Joe Ross has four legs. Joseph Stalin, if he had two more legs.
Bonesaw rips off his shirt, yeah? And says, Chuck your law. Big dirty tricolor.
And the queen of Irish wrestling, Katie Harvey.
I want one to sign. Just CM
I'm
Punk.
I'm so embarrassed. CM Punk.
It's Low Blows. Bravo!
Congratulations to the 43-year-old Tom Brady. There's hope for you yet, Katie Harvey. last week, defied the odds by defeating young gun Patrick Mahomes, the pretender to the GOAT throne in the Super Bowl. The Tom Brady's Tampa Bay Buccaneers defeated the Kansas City Chiefs, who were the whopping favorites going in, by 31-9 for Brady to lift his seventh Super Bowl and become the first quarterback to celebrate a Super Bowl win in his home stadium on Sunday, again at the age of 43. Absolutely huge stuff by Tom Brady. Fantastic. And I won a fair bit of money on it, as anyone who listened to the Super Bowl special edition that Nash put out on the network over the weekend would have done, if you'd have followed my advice. But guys, as we get kicked off here on another edition of Low Blows, Rick Nash, Dom Tuck, Katie Harvey, in the house as always. Guys, what's the best example in wrestling of an old dog putting a young pretender in his place? Katie, we'll get started with you.
You know what? Surprise, surprise. I don't have an answer to this, right? But it's not because I didn't prepare. It's because I am sick of this bullshit narrative, right? That Tom Brady is washed up and over the hill at 43 years of age. And you know why I think this is bullshit? Because today I found out how many NFL games they play a year. They play 16 games a year. He should be fucking still winning Super Bowls at the age of 93 for playing 16 games a year. Like, it is baffling to me that this is such a big story, that he's such a high quality player at this age. And it ties into wrestling, because we talked last week about how there was only two Rumble entrants under the age of 30, right? And I've seen so much discourse over this about how this was disgraceful, and, you know, WWE needs to focus on young stars. And like, people were giving out, like, if Edge wrestles Randy Orton at WrestleMania, like, that's a combined age of like 80 something. And like, who wants to see that? I want to see that. Because you know what? Some people hit their prime in their 30s, and yes, even their 40s. And you are not washed up as an athlete once you get over 25, okay? Look, this is directed at me as much as anyone else. But it's a bullshit narrative, and we need to get rid of this. So I don't think Tom Brady's an old dog, and I hope he wins 7 more Super Bowls. Like, just let him keep playing. Like, I do not understand this narrative.
No one's stopping him playing, okay? I feel like you've missed the point. And you've taken it maybe rather personally, which I feel somewhat responsible for starting this with.
You okay, Katie?
It's are you all right? Like,
because I was listening to another podcast about Tom Brady, and I just got so riled up listening to it about how these fucking 20-year-old presenters are astounded that a man of 43 can play football. And it just rattled me. That's all it did.
It's not something that happens a lot, though. And it's something that, like, we see, like, players as they get to their late 30s or so on. And again, no one's saying that they're old or they're pensioners or that their lives are over. It's not that they're saying. But the point that they're making is not a lot of people do it. So we saw, say, Drew Brees play, who's another kind of quarterback in their 40s. I won't use any adjectives because that seems to be triggering you. But he's a a quarterback in his 40s, and it's just he didn't play well. He's not the player that he was, and it becomes quite apparent soon. And again, I know they only play 16 games, like a season, or 20 max if they win the Super Bowl, but at the same time, it's not like other sports, like, because again, that game is 3 hours long and involves them being chased constantly. Like, Patrick Mahomes got absolutely crushed multiple times while playing on a broken toe by 300-pound men.
And you know what? That's grand, because he has a 9-month break now. He's a 9-month holiday to get over his broken toe, and he can wipe his tears up with his millions of dollars of his Super Bowl money.
I'm not saying he's a victim. I'm just saying that's why what happens. Like, again, I feel like this argument's about something else.
If I got a 9-month break from wrestling every year, which admittedly has happened the last few years for reasons.
The last 2 years notwithstanding.
I mean, I would probably be wrestling until I'm 100, because I'd have 9 months to recover.
Again, but it's not something that you, like, with wrestling, you're in control of, like, again, not always, and injuries happen. That's not to diminish the physical punishment the wrestling takes, but, like, you have somewhat control over the damage you take and the risks you take.
Really? You're going to say that to me? I have somewhat control over the damage I take.
Okay, well, nobody asked you to get up on the top rope and dive off.
That's true.
You decided this is what I'm going to do.
Football's a work anyway. Now,
that's why they call it high risk.
Like, football's a work. Like, I know Tom Brady has deflated them footballs. I know about my NFL now. I understand.
See, I knew Phil Boyd would turn you eventually. Sean in the Zoom chat says Patrick Mahomes was chased out of the pocket more than any other quarterback in Super Bowl history. Thank you, US Murph, off second captains, if you don't listen, for that fact. Jamie Donahue says Hogan turning the crowd at WrestleMania 18. Dom, a bit blindsided by Katie Harvey's answer. So look, no pressure, but who do you think is a good example of an old dog putting a young pretender in his place?
Well, I'm not going to take this one personally, so let me take you back.
You're the young pretender, so.
Let me take you back to arguably one of the most successful years in wrestling and WWE's history. It's 1998, Stone Cold Steve Austin, The Rock, The Undertaker, everyone running wild through the Attitude Era. Stone Cold Steve Austin, the number one drawn wrestler of all time. But at the time, there was also this buzz around the MMA business and, like, the idea of shoot wrestling, in air quotes. So some genius decides, you know what? Let's completely expose the business, and we're going to have, like, an MMA shoot fight sort of thing with absolutely nonsensical rules on Raw called the Brawl for All. It turns out to be an absolute train wreck. People get hurt and the fans completely hate it. The rules make no sense. But nonetheless, the winner turns out to be a complete upset because Bart Gunn wins the tournament. So he goes on to WrestleMania in a Brawl for All match against real-life fighter, absolute behemoth, Butterbean. And he gets absolutely destroyed in 2 rounds or 3 rounds or whatever it was. Absolutely destroyed. And it was an absolute train wreck.
Yeah, very true. Very true. And again, like, that's what Bart Gunn gets for thinking he was, like, there was a lot of shit talk as well. He was very cocky and always a pro wrestler and he's told to do it. But it was very satisfying to just be like, nope. Like, for WWE to have such a good example on their biggest show of the year of wrestling, you know, it's not a fully legitimate sport, was quite entertaining. Like, it's Vince McMahon alone was put in this place. What I want to talk about is when CM Punk did the pipe bomb a few years ago, and I bring this up as an example quite regularly because I quite enjoyed it. It's a great memory for me. And then the next week on SmackDown, he came out and did a promo with Triple H, and Triple H is like, look, you've got our attention now. What is it you want? Go on, tell us. What is it? More money? Is it you want to have, you want to have your face on ice creams? Okay, we'll put your face on ice creams then. I just talked to him like a demony child. And, like, again, whatever side of the generation battle you're on, you're going to side with your guy. You're going to be like, well, CM Punk says Doom wasn't a very good movie. And that's how people are going to see it if they're on the young buck side. But me, I was even aging around then. So I'm kind of like, yeah, CM Punk's being a bit of a dick here. So fair play, Triple H, for actually going, go on. Yeah, we'll give you what you want. Just say it. Say it on television. What is it you want us to do? Tell the fans you want more money. Go. And CM Punk had to think very fast on his feet. So that was one for me. Guys, we have a busy show this week. Surprise, surprise. There's like, we are entering into another busy period. It's the road to WrestleMania. So we're entering into another busy period of wrestling. So loads to talk about. AEW have a pay-per-view coming up. NXT have a takeover this Sunday, believe it or not. And Elimination Chamber is coming up and everything's building up towards them. So loads to discuss as we edge closer and closer to WrestleMania. And of course, the WrestleMania style stories are going to break. But first, we're going to get kicked off by talking about the news stories of the week and what piqued our interest, ladies and gentlemen, because it is time for
Queen versus King.
Queen versus King, because my two co-hosts are, and this is relevant of my original two co-hosts and the one filling in because he is just as antagonistic as the person he's replacing. My two co-hosts are good friends, but they're even better enemies. And what we do every week to discuss the biggest stories in professional wrestling today is we pit them together. We give them points for punditry. We put 30 seconds on the clock for the top five news stories, and I pick who the best story is with some help in the chat, guys. If you have opinions, by all means, share them. Starting now, currently, Dom representing Team Keen leads 3-2 in the weekly contest, but it is best of five. And then the winner gets the point in the weekly contest. Dom, you're going to go first because Katie went first last week. We'll get this show on the road now. In the first story, WWE's fourth quarter finances came out and they reported record revenue of $972 million recorded due to the Peacock deal, despite big hits and live events and no Saudi Arabia shows. Aside from Mania, they don't anticipate returning to audience shows until the second half of 2021. And they hand-waved poor Raw ratings, saying the fans are watching more and more on digital and blaming stuff like the US election and COVID for taking people's attention away from watching Raw every week. So with all of this in mind, Dom, is the WWE dying?
To be perfectly honest with you, Rick, I think we all have to come to terms with it. The sad, simple fact is that the WWE is doomed. My prediction is it's not going to make it till 2022. WWE has survived losing its top stars like Hogan, Austin, Rock, Cena, but it's been dying ever since it lost its one true box office star, someone that saved WWE at the worst of times. The man that sadly got released from the company last year. I don't think the company will survive much longer without Curtis Axel.
Fair, a strong argument. Katie Harvey, that's a tough one. But Katie, I give you a chance. You're 30 seconds on the clock. Is WWE dying?
No, but I wish this argument would die because we know that WWE will never go away. And like, in fairness, they've put out all these excuses as to why they haven't done well. And all those excuses are valid because we're in the middle of a pandemic. So everything is disrupted and it doesn't mean that it's going to die. And I thought we all got together at the end of last year and agreed that the last year didn't happen and nothing could be held accountable for the last year for things going to be shit. So they're not going to die. They're just in a slump like everything else in the world.
Okay, fair enough. A valid argument, Katie. I'm not going to disagree. But I'm going to give Dom the point because he's not trying to get a job out of it. He's treating this question as serious. And even if it is debatable that Curtis Axel might bring a forth the rest of the apocalypse, at least, you know, you say true to yourself. Dom, the point's for you. Question two. WWE Vice President Nick Khan this week spoke about WWE looking to build a younger audience by working with Cardi B, developing a children's TV show, and reevaluate their gaming strategy. How would you help WWE get down with the kids? Katie Harvey.
Right, well, I'll give my expert opinion on how to reach the kids. What they need to do is find out where the kids are. And I'll tell you where the kids are because I know these things. They're on TikTok, they're on Twitch, they're on YouTube, they're on WhatsApp. So what they need to do is get their WWE superstars to harness Twitch, to harness TikTok, to harness these social media channels and reach the kids. Oh, wait, they crushed it. They took those channels away from their superstars. So they're not going to reach the kids because they've shot themselves in the foot.
Okay, Dom, you're one of the kids, arguably. How should WWE get down with you?
Now, the one thing I was thinking of is, just remember Saturday Morning Slam? It was one of their smaller weekly shows. They should bring that back and have it on YouTube and the WWE Network. There was so much potential in it, just because it was guys like Daniel Bryan just having like real simple comedy matches and like funny backstage interviews and stuff. Like, I think a show like that would go down better nowadays, just because of the WWE Network and YouTube and the deals that we have now with the likes of Fox and stuff. That's just what I think.
Okay, fair enough. I'm going to give the point to Katie Harvey for that one, because I did enjoy you listing out like social media networks like a pure ma. They have the YouTube, they have the Twitch, they have the TikTok. Very much enjoyed that. I found that entertaining. So it's one apiece as we enter question three. Game Changer Wrestling have announced that they'll be bringing WrestleMania weekend favorite shows like Joey Janela's Spring Break and Josh Barnett's Bloodsport to Tampa, given that Mania is expected to have up to 25,000 fans in attendance, similar to last Sunday's Super Bowl that we spoke about at the top of the show. But should any of this be happening? Is there an appetite for Mania weekend indie shows, or is it immoral, Dom?
No, it just shouldn't be happening. But that's not going to stop them. Like, I don't know what's going on in particular in the likes of Florida. Like, stuff's just messed up there. But I think the WWE have the benefit of using the huge stadium for Mania. Like, they'll be able to take the best precautions and measures they can, but like these smaller promotions, I don't think that will be the case, and I would not be surprised if it gets reported that loads of COVID cases come from these shows. So it's absolutely not a good idea.
Okay, fair point. Don't have to argue it, but Katie, I'm gonna ask you to do it. What's your own thoughts?
I actually didn't have a problem with them having fans for Mania, because I seen part of the Super Bowl and I seen it was handled well. And I know that they invited the healthcare workers to the Super Bowl, which I think is actually a lovely little boost. And most of them are probably vaccinated at this stage. But because professional sports organizations can't be trusted, they also put super spreader Chris Jericho in the Super Bowl with all the healthcare workers. So it just shows the people on top cannot make good decisions. So no, I don't think it should be going ahead with audiences at Mania or indie shows at Mania.
Katie, I'm not going to lie. I wasn't listening to what you said, but I'm going to give you the point anyway, because I really enjoyed Phil Boyd in the background making Hulk Hogan poses.
That's not fair. I don't have a Phil in my background.
That's your call, and that's a choice you make. You know what I mean? There's nothing stopping you from, say, you know, calling up a Liam Royal or a Connor Day and having them in the background making poses. So Katie has used the Phil advantage to sneak into a 2-1 lead. Question four. Lars Sullivan may be done with wrestling. It's been revealed, surprise, surprise, after his WWE release, following a torrid few years after old social media accounts and pretty disgusting comments that he made were found. But even if Sullivan wanted to keep wrestling himself, do you think he'd be able to find anywhere that would have him, Katie?
Look, I hope things change after this year, but if 10 years in wrestling have taught me anything, it's that no one is ever truly blackballed. There will always be a promotion that springs up that will hire their mates, that will hire people for free, that will just not look into people's history, and will just do whatever they can to get the cheapest, fastest show on the road as possible. So I hope it changes, but again, I don't see him being done with wrestling, because no one is ever truly blackballed.
You heard it here first. Lars Sullivan coming to CCW's comeback show in Cork soon. Dom, do you think that Lars Sullivan is done?
Like, to be fair, he could end up in somewhere like Impact. Like, I don't think he'd go to AEW, but somewhere like Impact, it would not surprise me. Like, think about Impact's history and how literally anyone that they could get their hands on from WWE, like, they got Brodus Clay of all people, or Tyrus as he was called. I could see him going there if he was still wrestling. And if not, he'd definitely get one of the smaller indie shows.
Okay, fair enough. I'm going to give the point to Katie for that one. Slightly stronger argument, but we will go on with question five anyway. Speaking of releases, Steve Cutler, the Forgotten Son, who spoke about he spoke out about Jackson Ryker, found himself also on the Future Endeavors list last week. This is believed to be after he contracted COVID while attending a New Year's party, then reporting for work while asymptomatic. Do you have any sympathy for Cutler, or is this his own doing, Dom?
Nah, I think this is his own doing. Like, no sympathy, especially as someone who, like yourself, like Katie, like anyone listening to this in Ireland, we've been in and out of lockdowns for like the better part of a year now. So let's be perfectly honest, like, he wasn't the star really in WWE, and he kind of just pissed it away by going to a New Year's Eve party and then going straight back to work. Like, I think he brought that on himself. Like, he wasn't a big deal. So yeah, I think he brought it on himself.
Okay, fair enough. Katie, any counterpoints?
Yeah, I do actually have a lot of sympathy from, I don't agree with what he did. He shouldn't have done it. But I have sympathy from the fact that he wasn't the only one that done it, but he's the only one who got fired. Okay. And I just think it's a case of he was expendable, so out he goes, when numerous other people on social media have been pictured at parties and stuff like that and have not been fired.
Yeah, I get that. I get the sympathy side of things. I think he's got like little to complain about, though, because like, if you're going to make an example of it, it's like, right, 10 people have done it, then it's based on performance because we can't sack 10 people. Do you know what I mean? Like, and in a release heavy environment like WWE, I think by doing it to begin with, especially when you're not essential, like, they got rid of some heavy hitters last year. Do you know what I mean? Like, Finley got sacked last year after nearly a decade's work with them. So I'm going to give the point to Dom. But, Katie, you did win the week, so you have tied things up at 3 apiece heading into next week. So that's the stories outside the ring. We're going to talk about the stories inside of the ring now, ladies and gentlemen. The good and the bad, starting with the bad, because, ladies and gentlemen, it's time for...
Say something stupid.
Say something stupid. Worst moments of the week. In at number 4, let's talk about NXT, because this weekend, like I was saying, believe it or not, there is an NXT takeover when they present Vengeance Day coming up on the WWE Network, where it's like, I get what they're going for because it's Valentine's Day and they're going for, you know, V-Day, that whole thing. But to me, it just looks like they couldn't decide what the name of a pay-per-view was, and they just chose between, like, one guy in the meeting was like, oh, do you know what pay-per-view I loved? Vengeance. And then another guy was like, do you know what pay-per-view I loved? Judgment Day. And then they're like, no, Vengeance is better. No, Judgment Day. And Triple H is like, lads, it doesn't fucking matter. It doesn't fucking matter. Vengeance Day. We'll just call it Vengeance Day. And it's just like, it's a shit weak name, because like, why don't they just call it the Valentine's Day Massacre? If you're just going to go back into your archive, like, you have a pay-per-view that is around Valentine's Day, or just something to do with Valentine's Day, because not only do people not, I don't think people like get the Vengeance Day relevance. I don't think it necessarily hits from a marketing standpoint. Why don't you just call it Vengeance or Judgment Day? Like, I'd be all up for that. Like, if they had Judgment Day again, like, because I'm like, oh, that's the one after WrestleMania, that comes after Backlash. But yeah, no, it pissed me off because I'm just like, that's such a shit name, because it's like, it sounds like something that you say to someone when you're in an argument with them and you can't think of a better response, where you're just like, yeah, well, I guess Sunday's gonna be your Vengeance Day. It's not like something that's serious. It's not something that like sounds cool. And what else are they gonna do if they're just combining past pay-per-view names? Is it gonna be King of the Unforgiven, and is it gonna be fucking fully No Mercy, Full Mercy? It just sounds awkward and weird, and I'm like, no, this isn't, it's not selling me. Like, it's and what you're going for, it doesn't work. Well, maybe that's just me. I don't know. Maybe there's loads of people who are like, Vengeance Day, I'm so in. I love days. I love vengeance. I'm all about that. But I'm not. It's not for me.
But look, Vengeance Day is shit. But King of the Unforgiven is fucking deadly. I would watch that. I want that to be someone's nickname. I want you to trademark that straight away, because that is gold. I absolutely love that. That's deadly.
Did I ever tell you what we're going to do in Courage, actually, for the for instead of having a main title belt?
No.
We're going to have a King of Courage. So, like, there were going to be a king, and there was going to be people who would, like, the number one contenders would be challenging them for the throne. And we're going to have, like, a Game of Thrones, because that was big back in the day. Would have been awkward after the last season when people hated it, but, like... Yeah, I think kings work. Yeah, so who knows? King of the Unforgiven. You never know. Coming to a Low Blow show. And Fight Factory episodes, what, 14 are we at?
Oh my God, call the next tournament that.
King of the Unforgiven. Boom. There you go. In at number 3, let's talk about SmackDown.
Yeah, so SmackDown, it wasn't as good as the last few weeks, but it's still a solid enough show. But there's some little nitpicky things that I was just like, ugh. First of all, it was what was the match? It was Chad Gable and Otis, and they've had like a little tag team and like a back and forth kind of thing with Daniel Bryan as well. But they had a tag match against the tag champions, Robert Roode and Dolph Ziggler. And when I seen this, I was like, oh, this should be good. Like, I'm looking forward to seeing Robert Roode and Ziggler because, like, I really, really like them. But then, well, first of all, I'm going to say, like, I absolutely love the Street Profits, especially Montez Ford. Montez Ford is so cool. Like, I absolutely love him. But they did this thing. It was, like, the most overproduced WWE thing where they were giving commentary, but they were on screen in the bottom left corner. It was just this little box that took up, like, a fifth of the screen. And it was so distracting because they were doing, like, their Street Profits shtick in the corner while the other guys were having a match. And it was so distracting that I was like, I just can't watch this anymore. So I just skipped to the next match. It reminded me of, like, I watched a lot of 97 Raws recently. And they do a thing with Bret Hart on the Raw after Mania where, like, they're interviewing while the match is on. They do that a lot. But this reminds me of that, except it's a bit more annoying because the Street Profits are very loud and, like, flamboyant, so it was really, really distracting. As well. So I'll get to like the Roman Reigns and Edge stuff later, but basically it got revealed that they're going with Kevin Owens versus Roman Reigns again. And like it's just a bit mad at this point because they had a really, really good last man standing match and their TLC match was good as well. But they've had last man standing, TLC. They also had a cage match as well. Like, where are they gonna go from here? Like, are they just going to have a singles match now? Like, because that's what they did with Edge and Orton last year. Like, are they just going to have a singles match? Like, do it in reverse order. Like, have a last man standing match, then a singles match. Like, I hope they go with Elimination Chamber for SmackDown as well, because I don't think I'd be into another Owens and Reigns singles match, to be honest. But that's just nitpicky. I'm looking forward to see where it actually goes before I judge.
Maybe that's like the new WWE thing where like feuds are blown off in reverse. So they start with Hell in a Cell and then it eventually gets to like, but they have to like, because the singles match is only a singles match, they have to pump it up, but they've already done the greatest wrestling match ever. So this time they have to be like Kevin Owens against Roman Reigns in the really good wrestling match.
They had Orton and Edge finish off their feud in the singles match last week.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, they're literally doing this all the time. Yeah, no, very true. I felt the same where you're just like, what?
It's just underwhelming. I think.
Yeah, it's like imagine like an MCU movie and the post-credit scene was the villain you just saw in jail go, I'm back. And it's like, we just saw Loki you again. Lose. God damn it. You were defeated. Like, you've no reason to be this confident. Very, very true. Good point. In the number two, perhaps a controversial one, the most spoken about moment on Raw, in Say Something Stupid, Katie Harvey from Raw.
Yeah, just because it's the most spoken about does not mean it's good. I just want to make that very, very clear. Okay. We need to talk about Nia Jax versus Lana and their massive feud-ending table match. That was so epic. And such a good end to their months-long feud that they didn't even bother to advertise the fact they had a tables match on Raw. Or they did, and it was done so badly I didn't notice. Who really knows? But we had Nia versus Lana anyway. We get the usual shtick of like Lana getting completely trashed all the way through. She gets a couple of lucky shots. And the match spills to the outside, which is where the aforementioned big moment comes. And basically all it is Lana moves, Nia Jax leg drops the empty apron and then holds her arse wandering around screaming, my hole, my hole. And like, I just don't even know where to begin with it, because like I seen this on social media before I watched Raw, and then watching it on Raw was so much worse because the match that preceded the incident was so bad. The feud in general has not been good, and it just felt so, I just don't know why she said it. I just don't know how it happened. I don't know how she has that vocabulary. I don't know why that's something she said. And just the kind of selling and acting was so hokey around the moment. You know what I mean? It was as if she'd said to someone backstage, like, I'm going to pop you during this match. You know what I mean? And she just was doing it to make someone else laugh. Someone that was not me. Because I was just like, what the fuck is she doing? And then like, people are so distracted by her shouting my hole and holding her own arse that she gets gently nudged through a table that's like propped up at an angle. And then apparently this is like the comeuppance from Lana's 9 tables that she went through. You know what I mean? Like, she was Samoan dropped heavily through 9 tables, and this gentle nudge is supposed to put them back on an even playing field and be her comeuppance for this entire feud. And the whole thing was just so bad. And then the worst thing was the exhausting jokes. I've never seen a joke like burn out as quickly as the Nia My Hole joke on Twitter did. Like, it's like, you know when you see someone's like granny making a joke about it on Twitter and you're like, right, that's not cool anymore. No jokes about me being the granny on Twitter, by the way, because like, I did not make this joke. I did not.
Now you're the granny level. going, I don't get it. She just said my hole.
But I think why it doesn't gel me is like, it's such an Irish phrase. You know what I mean? Does anyone outside Ireland say my hole? Does she know the implications of like holding her arse and shouting my hole? Does she know what she's saying? And I don't know whether it makes it better or worse if she does know. I just don't understand the entire thing that happened. And like, if anyone found it funny, like, please explain to me the humor, because I don't get it. I don't see it.
I think, here's what I think happened. I think Becky was just hanging around. Like, she's, do you know when like someone in work has a baby and they come in with the pram and everyone's like, oh my God, oh my God. And they're just having the bands backstage beforehand. And like, Naya's like, are you coming back from Mania? And Becky's like, behold, I'm coming back. I'm chilling out at home. And I was like, what did you just say? That's gas. Oh, I said my hole. I'm like, I'm going to say that. I think that's exactly what happened. I feel confident that that's it. Or Sheamus or someone told her that. And she just thought it was amazing and she went for it. What, like, but apart from that, like, what, like, if this is a new gimmick that Nia has, what, like, Irishisms would you like to see her say in future? Like, you bollocks.
Like, maybe slon, and then she just doesn't come back. I don't know. Like, jeez. That's very harsh.
Jeez, heat with Nia.
That was very harsh. I apologize.
I hope you get a selfie from Eva Valkyrie now with her and Nia going, my new best mate, she's coming over. Points.
You need to cut that and put that on Twitter and tag her.
No, don't stop. That's how Tori came after me.
To be fair, like, now you're getting slated on a podcast, it won't even register with her. She won't even like.
But I feel bad because I you know me and dog piles, I don't like it. But it's just this whole segment just was not good. You know what I mean? And then like that one thing she said does not save it and does not make it good.
Okay. To be fair, you're not dogpiling her because it's literally like everyone else is on her side for this one. Oh. Like, normally we don't like Nia, but like everyone else now is like, that's gas. And you're just like, get her, boys, and just jumping on her by yourself.
I'm just gently nudging her through a table.
Yeah, that's what you're trying to do. You're literally trying to do a Lana on her here. So don't worry, you're not dogpiled. I think she's good. I think she's happy with the attention she's getting anyway. But I do get what you're saying about the joke, because it's like, I hate those jokes as well, where everyone just promptly just goes like the exact same joke. Like, haha, my hole. What, Nigel? Did you just want to say what Nia said? Yeah. That's the in at number two, but in at number one, we need to talk about the wedding from AEW last week, because Jesus. AEW, they've done quite well. Like, you know, there's a lot of things that they've done where like they're going through the process of like launching a weekly wrestling TV show, and there's a lot of like you know, types of different types of shows that they have. So for example, like they had their first tribute show with Brody Lee and we're like, wow, AEW are really good at that. That's really genuine and fresh and like from the heart, like, and you could see it was like different to the tribute shows that we're kind of used to and so on. And they've been very good with a lot of their own kind of twists on wrestling archetypes. So it was interesting to see what they do with a wrestling wedding, because I think that's something that we can all admit to having a bit of a guilty pleasure for. And I know it mightn't be for everyone's taste, but I like them. Katie, I think you've said before that you're mad for having a wrestling wedding. I think that's why you got engaged, at least on social media, you said. We all love a wrestling wedding when it's done well and turned up to the max. The problem was here, I think AEW's plan was have a wrestling wedding, question mark, question mark, question mark, profit. because that seemed to be all that they had in mind. There was like, it started out reasonable. Now, of course, the flaw here is that it's coming off the back of a very, very weak storyline. So Kip Sabian and Penelope Ford, maybe this makes sense if you're watching Dark and Being the Elite and all of the extra AEW shows. But if you just watch Dynamite, which I have to assume is the majority of their fan base, Kip Sabian and Penelope Ford just showed up together one day and it's like, oh, they're a couple now. And it's like, okay, fair enough. And then one day they're like, oh, we're getting married now. And it's like, right, you're kind of a minor character. Don't really care, if I'm being honest, but go you, congratulations. And then that was somehow used as a way to bring Rusev in as the best man in what I guess was AEW trying to twist off his Rusev Day gimmick and kind of bring him in as not a totally serious character and not the kind of Bulgarian brute, probably because he wanted to try something new, which is all fair enough, but it hasn't really worked. Because it's like, it plays off the fact that you're assuming Kip Sabian and Rusev even know each other. I don't believe they do. I don't believe they ever met until like Rusev showed up on AEW and he's like, oh, we're doing this best man gimmick. And he's like, yeah, I'm Kip, by the way. That's how much chemistry they all have together. It doesn't really work. It hasn't worked. And again, they were kind of hoping that this would just magically make it work. They started off with like Jim Mitchell, which was that was a good touch. Minister Jim Mitchell from Impact was probably his biggest run. But he came out and he was the minister for this. And you're like, okay, cool. They're bringing back, you know, an old school wrestling guy. I can start to get into this. And then there was nothing. There was nothing. Jim Mitchell sounded like 1999 Jerry Lawler. Hosting the wedding, just like staring at Penelope Ford the entire time, and she's like all dressed in the kind of risque gown, which again, that's her gimmick. I don't mind it, like, but him just slobbering over her and then making the vows, they were very forced and cheesy and like kind of. It was creepy uncle at a wedding humor that he was using. Do you know what I mean? To have and to grope. Kayfabing, like, what was it? Kayfabing all others. And it was just, no, this is not good. And then, like, Kip Sabian got in a line at one stage, which was funny because you can believe him. He plays such a slime ball. It's like, I remember when your eyes met my eyes meeting your chest. And it was like, okay, that's funny because he's a slime ball. But, like, that was about as good as it got. And that's not very good. And then Rusev came out and just talked about, you know, I used to wrestle in WWE and, oh, don't WWE have shit storylines. This isn't my first wedding, if you know what I mean. It's just like, okay, yeah, we get it. Like, we're like, I think we're all sick of, like, having this whole, I used to wrestle for WWE and WWE are shit and they didn't give me creative freedom and I should be a main eventer, tinge to it. And that was his entire best man speech. It was going nowhere. There was no, like, payoff to it. At best, it became funny because the fans hijacked the segment. Like, Rusev just turned around and goes, what is love? And then the fans start going, baby, don't hurt me. But then, like, he started playing it and then he started singing it himself. And then he's just like, let's do it again. What is love? And then it's like, the joke's over, Rusev. The joke's over. Quit while you're ahead. And then they did a turn because Chuck is their butler, which I think happened because of a match that I probably ignored a few weeks ago. And he turned on them and Orange Cassidy was in the wedding cake and they ruined everything. And that was that. It was not good. AEW, you know, you passed a lot of tests. You've not passed the wrestling wedding test. That was really bad. And here's the thing. It's like when we talk about Lars Sullivan or an Ahmed Johnson or a Ryback or a Forgotten Sons. And, you know, when it's one of these storylines that we're like, this isn't going to work. And, you know, it's not going to work from the get-go. It's been like that with the whole best man, Rusev, Kip Sabian thing since the start. It's like, this is weird. It's not good. It's not working. And AEW are just forcing it down our throats at this stage. And it's like, stop, lads. We're not on side for this. I don't remember ever agreeing to this. I don't remember saying it's good. And you're just making it bigger and bigger. And I think it's one of these things where, like, they're just, they, like, I think Chris Jericho versus Orange Cassidy was the last time I felt this way about AEW, where they're like, it's really good though. And it's like, it's not, it's shit. And they're like, no, but it's actually good. No, it's shit. Sorry, lads. And it was. And I hope that devoting that amount of time, especially while NXT had one of their best shows in recent memory, which we'll discuss momentarily, I hope that that was the kicking that they need to just drop this all together, because it was not entertaining at all. I think it's fair to say I was not a fan. But look, I want to talk about good wrestling, and there was a lot of it to talk about. So let's talk about the best parts of the week, because, ladies and gentlemen, it's time for... This is awesome. Best moments of the week. In at number six, let's start off by talking about Main Event. What's going on there, Dom?
Main Event, baby. The number one show of the week. I haven't watched it in so long, but it was either this or AEW Dark for me. So I was like, you know what? Main Event, it was usually quite easy to watch. So I'll dive right in. I didn't really know much about it in the last few years. Like, I remember when I went to a Raw in Liverpool, they taped it right before Raw. And that was really, really cool. It was a nice warm-up for the show. But it turns out, like, nowadays, they're actually doing it before Raw and the Thunderdome, which I found really, really interesting. But it's a good way to, like, see guys like Drew Gulak and Ricochet, like, have 10-minute matches, because you don't really get to see as much of them anymore. But the first match was Drew Gulak versus Humberto Carrillo.
I love the enthusiasm announcing him.
But, yeah, it was a real decent map-based technical match. Like, Drew Gulak is so, so good. Like, I really, really wish he was doing more, because, like, he's so good at that, like, aggressive technical style. Like, just constantly taking him down, working the leg or working the arm. Like, so, so good. I haven't seen much of Humberto Carrillo, but he was good in this match, I thought. And they kept it really, really map-based as well. Like, there wasn't a lot of high spots until the end, which was really good, I thought. Obviously, there was Raw recaps as well. Like, I didn't watch them because I watched Raw. Ricochet versus Angel Garza then. I fucking love Angel Garza. He is so good. Him and Andrade together, like, I really, really like that tag team. But I think Angel Garza has so much potential. And, like, we all know how good Ricochet is. So this was a treat for Main Event, in my opinion. But, yeah, it was, as you'd expect, really, really good. Ricochet was a bit more on the aggressive side, which I really, really liked. You don't really get to see that much from him. And Garza was just Angel Garza. Like, he's just so, so good. So, like, flamboyant and, like, such a good heel. His character work is off the charts. I absolutely love Angel Garza. Like, I need to see more of him. Like, I don't know where he's been on Raw the last few weeks. Like, I think he just popped up again last week. But before then, like, he wasn't really doing anything. So I'd love to see him do more. But, yeah, that was it.
Okay, excellent stuff. Interesting. Always good to check in with Main Event. And again, you're filling Corporate Keane's shoes. So that's his favorite WWE show. So thanks for keeping us posted on that. In at number five, not one from the ring, but something that's worth speaking about. Katie.
Yeah, this is just something I wanted to include. It's, I suppose, more of a news story from the wrestling world. The story of Gabby Tuft. I was watching Entertainment Tonight and seeing this segment, and Gabby Tuft used to go by the stage name Tyler Rex, who people might remember from WWE. And basically, she has transitioned to a woman. She's come out as a transgender woman in the last couple of months. And this news story was just, it was just really, really nice. And I just think we need more nice stories in the world at the moment. And it was just very detailed about how unhappy she's been for the last few years. Especially in, like, what can be the very masculine world of wrestling, especially if you remember, like, Tyler Rex was, you know, like, dreadlocks, tattoos, very muscular, very tall. And just kind of her struggle fitting into that mold and what was expected of her because of the way she looked. And now she's happy. And it's just a really, really nice story. And it's just, it's something I would say, like, go out of your way to watch. I think that there's been a lot of changes in wrestling in the last year. I think that people are becoming more accepting of different people and the way they want to live their lives. And this was just a really good story of a different perspective of someone that we kind of grew up watching and where they're at their lives now. And just something I wanted to include.
Excellent. Congratulations to her. That's fantastic stuff. And as well, though, like, it's important because, like, again, I know there's a lot of debates around trans issues, like, especially when you have the likes of Graham Linehan and JK Rowling there kind of doing damage with their own views. So it's good to kind of get representation in other forms of entertainment and in wrestling in particular, because right now we literally just have, in terms of mainstream attention anyway, it's just Nyla Rose flying the flag. So and obviously I know Tyler X are like as a wrestler finished up as a wrestler a while back, and I don't know if Gabby intends to kind of go in that direction, or if her wrestling days are behind her, but it's still good to see as well. Like, and just it's an interesting one because obviously such a dramatic change, and then kind of I'd say it has a lot of people who worked with her at the time kind of reimagining and kind of evaluating, and that can only help kind of having that so out there in the open. Anyway, moving on back to the ring, let's talk, sticking with you, Katie, we'll talk about Raw.
Okay, so when talking about Raw, I'm going to backtrack twice. Okay, so I have two backtracks to make. When Raw kicked off, we got kicked off with Shane O'Mac. I don't know if I'm the only one in the world who still gets excited by Shane McMahon. Yeah, I'm one of the few.
No, I'm saying I like it. Sorry, I was actually...
Oh, you like it too? Oh, yeah. Okay, good. I thought I was in the minority, especially after his last run. He was here to announce the Elimination Chamber participants. At first, I hated this because I was like, it's a 3-hour show. Why aren't we doing qualifying matches? Like, why is Drew in the chamber? Because sometimes the champion's in, sometimes the champion's not. I was just like, I just feel like there was a better way to do this rather than Shane O'Mac turning up out of the blue and just saying, hey, here we go. So we announced the participants, which, if I can remember off the top of my head, is Drew McIntyre defend the title, The Miz, Randy Orton, Jeff Hardy, AJ Styles, and who is the sixth person?
Did we say Sheamus? Yeah, we did.
I can't remember the sixth person. I'm sure it will come to me. But the whole gimmick is that they're all former champions, which is cool. And I was kind of like, oh, they're kind of building up Sheamus and Drew, and now they're just both in the chamber. So, like, what's going on? This is a bit crap. Until I seen the promos throughout the night that kind of sold me on this Elimination Chamber, because it turns out other people think that it was crap too, which kind of justifies it. So, like, Sheamus cut this excellent promo where he's like, why is this a chamber match? You know, like, you're basically shitting on me here. Like, you're making a show of me. Do you not think I'm a draw? Like, that popped me big time. It's like, do you not think I'm a draw? And Adam Pearce has to kind of stand there being like, well, you know, like, we just wanted the best match we could provide. And he's like, so you don't think I am the draw? You don't think this is the match? You don't think this is worth it? And it just puts such a nice edge to it. You know what I mean? It's like, I know, hang on, Sheamus is a 4-time world champion. Like, they do have the history. So the feud that I didn't like last week, I'm now like, hang on, the lads were a bit hard done by here. You know what I mean? I actually do want to see this singles match. So that was a really nice way to play with it.
Yeah.
And then obviously they had like a couple of people wrestling. So they had AJ Styles versus Jeff Hardy, and they had a bit of a banger. You know what I mean? Like, it was really, really good. And I'm like, oh, you know what? They are going to be deadly in the Elimination Chamber. I'm glad they're both in it, and this isn't a qualifying match. They did Randy Orton and Drew McIntyre as the main event, which ended in a disqualification with Sheamus running in. And now I get the vibe that it's like, okay, Sheamus should be having the singles match, so he's probably going to run through people in this Elimination Chamber to get to Drew. And it just set a lot of nice things in motion, which means I'm actually really excited for Elimination Chamber and what they've done, even though at the start of the night it seemed really kind of sterile and random that they were just going to put these people in. And then you've Edge coming out, and he's basically cutting another great promo about, like, yes, I've done the tour of champions, I don't know who I'm going to challenge, but now Drew's in the Elimination Chamber. So what do I do? If I pick Drew, I might not get Drew. I don't know who's going to walk out. And he's cutting this great promo, bigging himself up. Like, I fancy my odds against anyone, but it's just that unknown factor of who it's going to be. And I just thought it was, again, adding more dimensions, because now Edge is probably going to pull back and he's probably not going to pick the Elimination Chamber. And then you've got The Miz involved in that promo, and he's like, everyone's forgetting I'm Mr. Money in the Bank. I'll just cash in the chamber, you know? And it's just like, shit, he is Mr. Money in the Bank. And what is a better time to cash in than someone who's after being smashed in a cage? I'm like, that could happen. And it just all came together so well. And I'm just really excited about Elimination Chamber and all the possibilities coming out of it. And there's still so much up in the air. And then everything just flowed really well on Raw, because out of that Miz and Edge segment, you get Damian Priest and Bad Bunny again. Bad Bunny's a wrestling fan. That spot worked deadly where he was distracting the referee. And like one of my favorite pops in wrestling is the heels being sent to the back. So Miz and Morrison gets sent to the back. Angel Garza is with them and he's the one wrestling Damian Priest. So you've got like flown from Elimination Chamber into that really nice segment, which is now elevated Damian Priest as a star. So now they're kind of building people on that underneath level. And then my second backtrack of the night after Elimination Chamber is Ric Flair's promo with Lacey Evans. Because what Ric Flair brings in promos these days is unpredictability. You don't know what he's going to say.
It really can go either way.
And it's really exciting. And it's just, it's something fresh. So what happened with Ric Flair was he comes out with Lacey and he's cutting this promo and he had some line, and I don't think I could do it justice, where he's just like, I don't listen to women. You can check my history.
That's a weird thing to say.
And I burst out laughing and I was like, oh, but it's really true. Like, you know what I mean? Like all these like ex-wives, valets, all the rest of it. And like, he does not give a fuck what he says. And it was just a really good, honest promo. And they cleared up my whole issue a few weeks ago was like, they've always had Lacey as like the family woman with the husband at home. So I wasn't buying into like her and Ric Flair as like a couple, which is kind of how they were presenting them. But they cleared all that up. She's just like, no, like I have the opportunity here to pick one of the greatest minds in wrestling. Why would I not take that? Like, I want to listen to him. I want to learn. And I was like, okay, now I see the motivation for you two being together. Mm. Ric Flair starts cutting his promo about how like he's just sick of talking about Charlotte. And you're like, yeah, I get that as well. Like, you're a 16-time world champion and she, like, you, it could be argued she's eclipsing you. Or, like, if you asked a casual fan today who's more important, Charlotte or Rick, a good portion of them would probably say Charlotte at this stage because they don't know Ric Flair anymore. So I'm kind of buying into that feud now as well because I see the reasoning behind it. I see why Rick and Lacey are together. I see why Charlotte's annoyed. And
Rick is justified as well in that because, like, the point he made is, like, Charlotte just talked to me like dirt on TV. And she did. We saw it and we're like, I think Charlotte's a heel now, but like she wasn't. But like, it's like, yeah, actually, if I'd be pissed off because she just made a show you on television. And like, not that that's how I necessarily handle it, but your family's a bit of a train wreck. And that's a historical fact we know about you away from wrestling. So
yeah,
it plays on all of that too. Like, so yeah.
So now I'm kind of buying into it.
Yeah.
So they had a match anyway, Lacey and Charlotte did, and it ended in disqualification because Charlotte just lost her shit and just would not stop attacking her. So it's given it this fire now as well, where it's like Charlotte can't control what's going on, so she's just going to lose it, you know what I mean? But maybe Lacey will get up on her because she does have Ric Flair now, the greatest of all time, teaching her. And now we might have the women's title thrown into the mix as well, because at Elimination Chamber we have Lacey versus Asuka. So Asuka, also Charlotte's tag partner, which they made sure to bring up numerous times as well throughout the duration of Raw. So clearly, they're either going to band back together or they're going to split and it's going to become a little cog in the wheel. So again, it's just lots of things happening. Everything's up in the air. And I just thought, like, on Raw, the promos just really kind of elevated all the possible storylines going into WrestleMania season. I thought it was really good.
You were a little vindicated though with part of it on Raw, where like from what you said last week, where Lacey's like, look, we don't even have to fight, we can be tag team partners, and Ric Flair's like, I think that's a great idea, why don't you be a tag team together? And then she's like, I've got a tag team partner.
Yeah. I was like, they ironically pushed them as a team after they've lost their titles, but cool, we won't dwell on that.
Yeah, all very true. Turns out that when you give characters a bit of believable motivation, we're okay with it, and we're like, this is now good.
I'm okay with it.
Yeah, there you go. No, a bit of well-deserved character development, which isn't something you get a lot in WWE, so when they do it, we're going to give them props. AEW is up next in number 3, and this was not a good show until it was, and it became a really good show. We spoke about the wedding already, and again, apart from that, there was just a lot of filler. This was one of those weeks where I'm doing my side-by-side NXT and AEW watch, and NXT has me, and we'll get to that as we go on a lot of the time. But AEW just kept losing me. But there was some good steps made. Like, for example, they did a lot of rehabilitation. We've spoken about on here before how the women's division is kind of AEW's weakest link. And part of that is down to, you know, they got last pick on the women who are contracted, like the available women who are contracted. And they also really couldn't get off the fence between whether they wanted to kind of go all in with Joshi wrestling or they wanted to kind of build up their own American-made AEW stars. And the pandemic has obviously not helped there. But they've started to work on it, and I appreciate what they're doing. They had a long match between Britt Baker and Thunder Rosa this week, which they let them wrestle for a good while. And they showed us that, like, despite a lot of the promos and a lot of the skits that's kind of made Britt Baker more popular and given her kind of a comfort zone within AEW, they showed us that she's a good wrestler. And they just reminded us of that, because I think the one thing people didn't have an issue with her with at any stage in AEW was that she's a good wrestler. Like, at the start, remember when we were like, oh, they keep saying she's a dentist. Like, the thing we're like is she's a really good wrestler though, but stop talking about the dentist stuff. And then they turned her heel and we're like, I don't know about this. And then they made her really charismatic and we forgot that she's a really good wrestler. So having her have a long match is like, okay, I'm back in on Britt Baker now. But also, they did a lot of good work on, they've got this, of course, it's Cody and Red Velvet, who's replacing Brandy, because obviously Brandy's pregnant. By the way, speaking of Brandy, I listened to her podcast with Renee Young. Renee Paquette, sorry. Actually, really decent podcast. Like, it actually, yeah, I have a lot more time for Brandy now than I did going in. So worth your while if you're looking for a good wrestling podcast this weekend. But Brandy's out. Red Velvet's in, teaming with Cody against the team of Shaq and Jade, who's AEW's. They're building her up a lot. But so far, what we haven't got from Jade is anything beyond her just doing the same thing she did when she first came in and cut a controversial promo on Cody saying he had a little dick and just being aggressive for no particular reason. Like, and it was just like, who is this person? I don't know if she's good. And any kind of even physical interaction she's had, which hasn't been much, hasn't been great. Like, she doesn't strike you as someone who's a good wrestler. So they did just a package of her working out, and she's kind of she's very athletic and she's in great shape, and she looks standout. She looks like, kind of, I remember last week we were speaking about like kind of super athletes and how Bianca Belair is like a legitimate like A grade athlete. Jade looks that way. I don't know what her background is. They haven't really given us much on that, but when they showed her working out, I'm like, okay, now I'm taking you seriously as a competitor, because you've actually presented her as a competitor and not just someone catty, just making bitchy comments every now and then that I don't know and you haven't established. So just getting back to basics, similar to what we're talking about on Raw, getting back to basics and just kind of showing us, wait, these are actually good wrestlers, is a really good thing. And it's important because now what they're going to do is they're going to start a tournament for a number one contender for Hikaru Shida's women's championship. But they've done it in a very clever way where there's two sides to the draw. One is the American side. So it's all like, not necessarily American, but like that's kind of the way they're pinning it. But it's all kind of like your standard women's division wrestlers in AEW. And then you've got a Joshi side as well. So they're acknowledging that there's two sides to their women's division, which can only be a good thing, because for me, and I've said it since the start of AEW, Joshi wrestling is what really we don't have. Like, they have that no other major American promotion has. And even when you take into like New Japan into account, I know they own Stardom, but they don't feature it on their show. So there's no major promotion apart from, say, a Stardom or an Eve who'd have featured this kind of wrestling. So to do that and to kind of give it its own side of the draw can only be a good thing. And I kind of hope that's a sign of things to come. So well done on them. That's not really what I'm going to talk about, though. Like, you have to know. Like, last week, when we're talking about the news stories, the first story we spoke about was Kenny Omega and Kota Ibushi's tweets, and is this the sign that the forbidden door is opening, and what's going to happen here? So, put it this way, it was The forbidden door is now open. It's been kicked open. It's happening. This is now a thing. We saw Moxie show up on New Japan Strong, which wasn't the biggest indicator that it was opening, because he's a reigning New Japan champion. But what we hadn't seen was any kind of acknowledgement or back and forth from the other side, from AEW towards New Japan. Kenny Omega and the Good Brothers, who again, the only acknowledgement that we have is them kind of referencing the Bullet Club and that whole storyline with the Young Bucks that's ongoing. They wrestled Moxley and the Lucha Brothers. And then obviously that would just turn into a massive brawl and then a massive like mess. Lance Archer came out and attacked Kenny Omega and the Good Brothers because he's got like kind of a partnership with the Lucha Brothers. It's kind of undefined, but he's just generally on their side. And that was interesting as well, because it repositions Lance Archer in a decent spot. And then out of nowhere, Kenta shows up on screen with a Bullet Club club top on, attacks Moxley, who obviously they're setting up a US title match for New Japan. And like I said, the forbidden door is kicked open, because now on commentary, you have them basically talking about New Japan storylines. It's like Kenta's been the briefcase holder and John Moxley's the US champion and obviously Dave Darebeef, but what's that got to do with this? And again, it's just widening what they're doing with Kenny Omega and Impact and the Good Brothers coming over there, and just kind of anything can happen on AEW. We're working with all promotions. And the great news, the back off, this is as he expected. Dave Meltzer's coming out and saying, yeah, no, this is done. This is now, like, the forbidden door is open. They're working together. There's a dialogue between the two companies. Stuff is going to happen. Now, there's the caveat that we're in a global pandemic. So what they can do and what is possible is quite limited for the time being, because there's no real travel back and forth, because like any traveling that you do from one country to the other includes a 2-week quarantine period now, which is mandated even in the US. So again, there's limits there. And why they were able to do what they were able to do with Kenta is because he resides in the US, even though he did wrestle on Wrestle Kingdom and the likes. So like, that's why it's possible there. But now it's open. It's open season. We can start teasing things. You can have little references. You can have little promos. And there's a lot to be excited about, because whatever about kind of the situation with the pandemic in the US, you know, there's like their vaccination program is going quite well. The US and the UK are actually as bad as they were at the start of the pandemic, they're as good now in the vaccination side of things. And Japan has always been a kind of leader in kind of dealing with COVID, and they've had they've had fans back since last summer basically, and doing full arena shows. You know, there's reasons to be positive that this could be something. And if this is happening, and it's pretty clear that it is, there's a lot to like over the next few months. There's the potential for Kenny Omega to be in the G1. There's the Golden Lovers. Like, they're both reigning champions in these promotions now. These tag team who were always set to wrestle each other at Wrestle Kingdom. That's now in play. You could have Kenny Omega win the G1 and then go on to face Kota Ibushi in an AEW versus IWGP Heavyweight Championship match. There are so many options on the table. Could Okada and Naito eventually be seen on AEW? Probably. Like, Tanahashi has like openly like kind of been on Dynamite before a few times, so now it's all on the table, and that just makes everything exciting, because there's a real, this was the one thing, it's called a forbidden door. And you know, as of last year at Wrestle Kingdom, when Chris Jericho beat Tanahashi, where if Tanahashi won, he was going to get an AEW championship shot. At the end of that match was Kevin Kelly going, unfortunately the forbidden door has been slammed shut on us tonight, guys, and that stayed with us ever since. Now it's kicked wide open and the possibilities are endless. Very, very exciting times, and a real high to end what's probably one of the worst Dynamites I've seen in a while. Not that it's a horrible show, but just not a lot happened, and NXT kicked his ass until the last few seconds on the show. Amazing, amazing stuff. I absolutely loved it. Well done, AEW. I'm very excited about what's to come. In at number two, though, let's talk about SmackDown.
So, yeah. Another very solid SmackDown, particularly with the Roman Reigns and Edge stuff. So what I really liked is how they approached the Edge stuff. So you have Edge building anticipation for who he's going to wrestle at WrestleMania. So on Raw, like, Drew McIntyre was, like, more respectful to him. And it was kind of the same with Pete Dunne and Finn Balor. Like, they were respectful towards Edge. Roman Reigns was not in the slightest respectful towards Edge. He came out with Jey Uso and Paul Heyman, straight away got on the mic, calling out Edge, saying he's disrespecting him by not showing up before he did. It was so good. And he's saying, like, Edge, why are you playing games? I want your answer tonight. And he delivered an ultimatum towards Edge. So, like, that would be the final segment of the night. But also, Daniel Bryan versus Cesaro. And whenever you see this match on paper, you're like, this is going to be good. And yeah, it was. It was very short, but it was very, very good. Cesaro got a nasty, nasty cut on the back of his head. I don't know how that happened, but it looked nasty. Like, all of the pictures are in black and white whenever you see it on social media. But again, Cesaro with another monumental win. And I think Cesaro is starting to build on the run of his career, maybe, because he's starting to get this momentum that he lost before. Because you remember right before WrestleMania 30, I think it was, he was starting to pick up all these wins. Like, I remember he beat Orton right before the Elimination Chamber, and that was a huge win. But he's starting to get these big wins every week now. So it's just building and building. So I'm really looking forward to see where they go with Cesaro. Also, you had an Intercontinental title match. You had Big E versus Apollo Crews versus Sami Zayn. Sami Zayn, again, just so good as the cocky, just annoying little heel. He's just so good. I think this was also the best I've seen Apollo Crews, because especially when he's taking moves off Big E, the way he feeds for him is just so good. He hit an unreal moonsault off the apron to the floor. I think it was on Big E. But again, Big E retains the title. And then at the end, Roman Reigns and Edge have a little promo, and just seeing them in the ring, I'm just like, this is the match I want to see. I don't want to see McIntyre and Edge. I want to see Roman Reigns and Edge. Like, that is the match for WrestleMania. And then they did the thing with Kevin Owens where he came in, hit a stunner. I thought that was really good, because Edge kind of goaded Roman to sending Jey Uso away. And then once Jey Uso went away, Kevin Owens slid in, hit a stunner, and then just left. I thought that was really well done, even though I'm not really particularly looking forward to the match. But what they did do, I really thought was smart.
SmackDown consistently being the best, like, most consistent wrestling show on TV lately. It's absolutely, like, great. To the point that now, like, and I've been flirting with this idea for the past few weeks, but now I've, like, kind of moved stuff around in my schedule where I'm like, I'm going to stay up and watch SmackDown on Friday night. I'm going to do it. I'm going to live tweet it. Because it has me that buzzing where it's like, can't miss. And it's become a thing that's more prominent in my life over the past few months where, like, I used to, like, last summer, now, again, and all wrestling was shit last summer because we were dealing with the zero crowds and stuff like this. But, like, last summer, I used to watch SmackDown, like, on maybe Saturday afternoon or Sunday morning, and I'd watch it through YouTube highlights. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Just to kind of know what's happening. And, like, I was like, yeah, this is grand, but I wouldn't watch all of it. Like, and now it's kind of getting better, like, slowly but surely, where it's like Saturday morning, I wake up like, oh, watch SmackDown, like, that. That's taped.
The exact same.
Yeah. And now I'm like, nah, I have to watch it live. Like, it's what if something happens? Like, it's like, it's brilliant. And Edge as well, second time we brought him up. That's when you know you're having, like, a wrestler of the year. You know what I mean? Where, like, we brought him up twice in This Is Awesome in 1 week. And it's not even the last time we're going to talk about him, because in at number one, let's talk about NXT last week, because again, this is something, I don't know why they don't do this all the time. I think it's because it's Edge and they want to have Edge on as many TV shows, but, like, it's just showing how good this story is by just painting potential pictures of different matches we could get at WrestleMania and having us go, oh, I want that one. I want that one. And we're just, like, constantly, like, chopping and changing every time, because, like, yeah, it was great to see Reigns and Edge. And on balance, I think for me, that's probably the match that I want as well. And I think it's the best match. But then again, I think of his promo last week. So basically, he came out and interrupted. Finn Balor came out and kind of did a promo setting up the match that he's got at Vengeance Day with Pete Dunne, which would be quite good. Again, I think a lot of us would be looking forward to that one. And then Edge's music hits and we knew he was coming out. Now, I think they announced last week that he was going to be in a tag match, but for whatever reason that got nixed and he's cutting a promo with Finn Balor. And like he turns around and he's like, look, I'm not going to lie, that belt that you got over your shoulder, I've never won that. That interests me. I've won the rest. I've never won that one. That's interesting to me. You know what? And then Pete Dunne comes out. And then Pete Dunne is just staring down Edge like, I don't give a fuck who you are, mate. And he's just like giving him that dead stare. And Edge is like, okay. I was like that. Like, you know, now I show respect to people, but I used to be like that. So I'm not going to hold that against you. You've got a chip on your shoulder. You've got a lot to prove. I respect that. I'd maybe like to wrestle you in the future as well. And then you're like, I'd be into any of these matches. Like Edge against Balor, I'm like, I really want to see that match. You know what I mean? If you gave me like, if you had something for Reigns where it's like, you know, The Rock came in or something like that, and you're like, if you gave me a big enough match to justify what we've got with Roman Reigns without Edge, because I'm not sure I want Reigns to lose the belt. Do you know what I mean? And I think I want Edge to win whoever the match he fights. I want Edge to be champion again. You know what I mean? So that's the one thing that kind of scares me about Reigns against Edge. I want this to be like where Reigns wins this belt and then loses it next year at WrestleMania. Do you know what I mean? That's what I want from Reigns. I want a proper long dominant champion. So I'm not 100% sold. Whereas like Edge wrestling Balor for the NXT championship just opens up the WrestleMania card. Because it's like, imagine you have Drew against Sheamus. You've got Reigns against, I don't know, Reigns against The Rock if you want your Hollywood match, or Reigns against fucking Lesnar or something like that. But Reigns is now the badass dominant guy, or some massively cool Roman Reigns match where, you know, he's probably going to win, but still it's going to challenge him. And then you've got Edge against Balor. I'd be really, really into that. And they sold me on it. But again, it's Edge cutting another awesome promo, making us go, yeah, I agree with everything you're saying. You're just talking me into the building. Like, whatever you're selling, I'm buying. So, well done, Edge. There was also some other good stuff on it, though. In the main event you had, again, they're doing the Dusty Rhodes Tag Team Classic. And then the main event, like, there's a lot of good tag team wrestling on it. But again, it, like last week, it blends into one another where it's just generally entertaining. Like, I'm not even sure who's in the ring at any stage, like, man or woman. I'm just like, this is all generally exciting entertaining tag team wrestling because it just blurs into one. But the standout match was definitely the main event. It was Ciampa and Thatcher against the Undisputed Era, which is as good as it sounds. And like Ciampa and Thatcher ended up winning it, meaning the Undisputed Era, like I don't see what else they've got left to do on NXT at this stage. They're just putting guys over now at this stage and kind of building up the next kind of section of the storylines and the people who are going to dominate when they're gone. I definitely see them coming up as a group after WrestleMania, and like imagine them on SmackDown. Like imagine them just messing shit up on SmackDown. It'd be fucking amazing. So yeah, I'm up for that. But it was a really good match and an interesting result as well. None of that is why I'm voting NXT the best wrestling show of the week this week. Because have any of you seen the Tian Sha vignette that they did last week on NXT?
Yes, I think I did see it.
I've heard of it.
This is one of the best things WWE has done in a long, long time. This was fantastic. Because for the past few weeks, past couple of months, they've been kind of rebranding Xia Li and having her kind of do martial arts training and show kind of a new side of her, building on her kind of Chinese heritage, but not in a WWE kind of exploitative, you know, mildly racist way. No, it's actually been in a respectful, cool way where it's like, oh man, I really want to see her. And then they had Xia Li make her debut under this new character a few weeks ago, and they had her do a big kind of, you know, an NXT style entrance. So you think of kind of your Karrion Kross or your Finn Balor or your Shinsuke Nakamura. She's now got an equivalent entrance. And it's like one of the well-produced things that's going to get really over. I can see it happening. And she's also got, like, again, I'm sorry, I don't know the guy she's with, and I'm not sure if we're meant to know it or if he's just meant to be kind of a corner man. But then like in the in the vignettes that they did for her, they had this like elderly woman sitting in a throne kind of deal and just watching. And you're like, all right, I guess that's just kind of a periphery character just building up Jia Li. And the fact that Jia Li wrestled a few weeks ago meant that, oh, I guess we're not going to learn who those are. They're just like her trainers or something like that. And then they just ended up giving like one of the best backstories they've ever given in wrestling. Because this was fantastic. And if you haven't seen it, I retweeted it on the Low Blows Twitter last Thursday morning. It would have been when I watched it. It's amazing. It reminds me of, if you've ever seen Kill Bill, the story for Ouren Ishii, when it's like a cartoon way to tell like a horrific and jarring story. But in a very, like, again, told in a cartoon. So basically, like, she was this like girl growing up like in a Chinese village, and then she rose into power, but people were challenging her power, so she realized she had to be vicious. And again, like, there's kind of Game of Thrones vibes as well going on, like, with it, because it's just like it's a Game of Thrones style origin story. And then turns out, like, at the end of it, when they go into this, like, you just have Todd Phillips being like, did he just say she, or whoever's the commentator, sorry if it's not Todd Phillips, but it's like, did he just say she's 1,000 years old? And you're just like, what the fuck? What is this? What is this character? Like, it's very Lucha Underground, but not like Lucha Underground was campy in the way that it did these storylines. Do you know what I mean? It was entertaining. It was fun. You weren't supposed to take it too seriously. With this, they're playing it off as in, this is going to change everything. Like, what is reality? You know what I mean? And they're playing it off as super serious, but it's fantastic. And it's like, is she going to get up off that chair? Like, is she going to, like, start killing people? Like, is she going to wrestle? Like, what's going to happen? I don't care about Jai Li anymore. What's the story with Tian Sha? Like, what's her deal? Like, what's going to happen here? It is absolutely fantastic. And a case of, like, when NXT is at its best and it's being the NXT we know and love, there are a few things in wrestling that can be better. And it feels like they got the finger out this week, and especially with this story. And they're like, we're going to tell you a fucking story. And that's what we want from wrestling. We don't necessarily, like, it's great having your Kenta show up. It's great having your Who Will Edge wrestle at WrestleMania. It's great having all of those. And they are exciting. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with them at all. They are legitimately good. But wrestling is at its best when, and it's not even just a wrestling thing. It's just, we're going to tell you a story here. We're going to tell you a cool fucking story. It's original. It's new. You haven't seen it before in wrestling. You don't know what's going to come. And I'm like, strap me. I'm up for it, because it's not a stunt. It's not an archetype they're falling back on. It's not a wrestling wedding. It's not something we've seen 1,000 times. And it's just like, well, this, how about it's a Royal Rumble winner, but this time it's who will Edge face instead of who will the Royal Rumble winner face. It's something completely original, and I'm all in. I am so excited for this. I cannot wait. I need more of this. It may end up, like, if they can hold this out and make this as good as I think they can, this could be something that we're talking about all year as far as wrestling goes. I am super excited. Guys, we do have Vengeance Day coming up this weekend. On the card so far, we have Finn Balor against Pete Dunne in 2016 OTT fans dream match happening. The only thing you could probably make it better for a lot of Irish fans, if it's in the Tivoli, it's not. It's in the Capital Wrestling Center, but it's for the NXT fucking championship, so that's a pretty big deal. I'd say that's going to be fantastic. You've got the women's title on the line in a three-way match. You've got Io Shirai against Toni Storm against Mercedes Martinez, a triple threat match. You've got the two finals of the Dusty Rhodes Tag Team Classics in the men's. It's either MSK or Legado del Fantasma against Ciampa or Thatcher, Ciampa and Thatcher, or the Grizzly Young Veterans. Obviously, Grizzly Young Vets are the reigning Dusty Rhodes Classic champions. And then the first ever women's Dusty Rhodes Classic, you've got Dakota Kai and Raquel Gonzalez against either Ember Moon and Shotzi Blackheart, or The Way, who are Candice LeRae and Indy Hartwell. We were supposed to have Johnny Gargano against Kushida, which I was actually pretty excited about, surprisingly, given that we're not high on Johnny Gargano takeover matches. But that apparently has been cancelled. Austin Theory came out today and said that Johnny Gargano's out of NXT. So I presume they're going to replace it with a show to come tonight. Guys, would it be something you're watching? Is it something you're interested in? Is there anything in particular that's kind of got your attention?
I didn't know it was on. So thank you for informing me and letting me know the card. Yeah, no, look, you've hyped me up about NXT. I think I'm going to have to start watching again. And like Finn Balor and Pete Dunne is a dream match. So like, I think I will definitely have to watch that one.
It's a banger, all right. Dom, anything in particular piquing your interest?
No, like all I knew about it was that Finn Balor and Edge match, or not Edge, Finn Balor and Pete Dunne match. That was the first time I heard the card, like the rest of the card, to be honest.
Well, look, you'll be reviewing it for us next week on Low Blow, so I look forward to kind of getting someone else's perspective on NXT, because I've been, by the sounds of things, I've been flying solo and the only one keeping an eye on it.
Sounds like it's getting better.
And that's fair, because like it has been weak for the past few months, but they're getting the shit together. So who knows, maybe we'll have a chat about it next week and see what you guys think. Or maybe it's just I've got Stockholm Syndrome with this brand that I have to watch every Thursday and I'm just making the best of it. So we should see when Low Blows returns next week. That is for next week, guys. In the meantime, we will have Ask Low Blows. If you're in the Zoom, we're going to have it right away. If not, if you're listening, we will have it Friday morning. So check that out. We have, guys, I can exclusively reveal, we've escaped the desert island, but there may be a new twist. So check that out. We're also going to be running down our worst potential WrestleMania cards. I cannot wait for that. And so much more. So listen into that. If in the meantime, we'll be back next week reviewing NXT Vengeance Day. I'm probably going to be staying up for SmackDown on Friday night. Don't hold me to that. I could easily fall asleep. I'm an old man at this stage. and then I do definitely plan on staying up for NXT Vengeance Day, even if it does have a shit name. So join us if any of you are doing the same. In the meantime, thank you, Katie Harvey, as always. Thank you, Dom Tuck. I've been Rick Nash, and that's the bottom line, because Loblaw said so.